Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a podcast dedicated for people that love to talk about movies way too much. Joining me today is Griffin. Griffin, how you doing?
Hey, I am fantabulous. You could say I'm a little emancipated, too, after seeing Birds of Prey.
But that's why you're in LA. You guys get these press screenings so far in advance from us. Mine's not for another week.
Yeah. I saw a lot of the ones were are for next week. But I'm doing pretty great. The movie was fun, man. The movie was a lot of fun. There's a lot of stuff to enjoy in there. And so, I mean, I'm not going to really talk about it too much unless you want me to. But I am pleased as punch right now. So that's
enough for me to hear that. Yeah. Without wanting to hear too many things, knowing that at least you are pleased as punch. I do enjoy that. So if you're tuning in, this is one of the first episodes of the podcast. And with that in mind, I just kind of wanted to kind of share who we are, what made us love movies, what some of that stuff maybe you don't know about us. And so today's episode is really just kind of the get to know you episode, where we're going to tell our stories and hopefully share some things that maybe we haven't shared elsewhere, so you can get to know us as we kick off this exciting new podcast. And if by chance you happen to be watching a video version of this, I'm even for the first time recording the podcast in my podcast corner. I actually converted my little office, built a second corner with a red wall, Funko Pops behind me, specifically for the purpose of the podcast, to have a separate space for it. And I barely used it since I delayed launching the podcast for 6 months. So now it's finally getting put to good use. So I guess with that in mind, I'll just kind of dive into I think both of us at the core of why we do this is that concept of talking movies too much. Like the people around us picked up on the fact, like, you talk movies more than most people. And, you know, I was watching all the channels that most of all of you probably watch. Campia, Movie Talk, Leiter, Schmodown, John Stuckman. And like, hey, why don't I jump on this YouTube thing and see what happens?
Absolutely.
And what's kind of your journey?
No, I mean, it's very similar to yours. I mean, I never really imagined myself in this space because I originally wanted to be a filmmaker. You know, I wanted to direct movies. I have a background in video editing and production and whatnot. I've directed a few short films when I was in college and stuff like that. And so I just weirdly enough stumbled into this because I thought it'd be a fun thing to do. I just, like, you know, I found myself watching like the AMC Movie Talk stuff a lot. I'm watching the Schmoes a lot. And I was like, oh, this is like, this is interesting. And that, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people talk about watching that John Campia video where he's like, how to get started in online movie punditry. And, you know, he always plugs it whenever he gets a chance.
I watched that video.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I was watching it. So I was just like, you know, I could do this.
Yep.
Like, this could be
my
fun.
Exact thought.
Yeah. It was like myself and like a couple of friends. I was just like, you know, you guys want to do this? You want to start a YouTube channel? And they said, sure. Eventually they kind of, you know, left and it just became me, but like, it, you know, it was just kind of,
and then you
that,
went all in and moved to LA.
Yeah, exactly. And now I'm just like, well, I know it just, like, weirdly enough, starting my YouTube channel just like changed my life, you know. It just like changed my career path and everything, because I was just like, oh, I kind of like this, and there's a lot of room to be creative in this space.
What was it, 2 years ago now, that you were texting me thinking like, hey man, should I move out to LA? And I was like, if I didn't have a wife and kids, that's what I would do. Like,
worst case
scenario, you have a crazy adventure and then you go off and do whatever you would have done otherwise. But it's pretty wild how what's happened over the last couple of years, all the little adventures that each of us have had separate from one another. But that's kind of the same thing with me. I mean, I just started it on a whim. After a couple of years of false starts, started after watching that new Ghostbusters movie that everyone else hated, and I was like just middle of the road, and I thought that was interesting that I didn't love it or hate it. I was just right there in the middle.
Right.
Assumed I'd quit in 2 weeks, and then it changed the trajectory of my life.
That's, yeah, exactly.
It's wild.
Well, and I
wasn't on my radar.
Yeah, well, and before we continue with it, I always think this is just kind of like a fun little thing. What was that, your first official movie that you started with, or do you not count Ghostbusters necessarily?
I mean, I get, I'm not sure in which regard you mean.
So, like, for your channel, for, like, Sean Chandler talks about, would you, for this iteration, for, like, you know, your, because you had talked about starting multiple times before, yeah. For this iteration that we have now, was Ghostbusters the all-female, that was your first film?
And I think I even said in the, I called it Sean Chandler talks about in the video, I think there's a card that falls down and everything. Yeah. So I guess I was thinking, like, branding, like, I don't even remember, like, because I didn't know it was going to become my career. I didn't know it was going anywhere. So pretty quickly, whatever memories were happening after I watched the movie, or I was like, all right, I'll call it Sean Chandler Talks About, and started coming up with branding stuff for it. I don't remember what was driving any of those decisions. And it's the brand that defines my life now.
Yeah.
So it's crazy
how
some of that stuff plays out where, you know, if I'd known where this was going, maybe I would have just called it Sean Chandler, or maybe it's a good thing that it has Sean Chandler talks about, because it's just different enough, just weird enough that it sticks out, makes people go, talks about what or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Have.
There's like, yeah, you, it's like you got to allow them to kind of like fill in the blank there. Yeah. No, it's just, I always like asking people what their first movie was, because I think it's just really interesting. Like, so you talked about the branding thing. I know for like myself, we literally did all of the stuff, like we did all of the branding, we did all of the, like, you know, I guess cosmetic stuff, and then we got the equipment, and then we sat down and my friend and I recorded a review for Ant-Man, and that was our first one.
So I think so when I first on this, it's still on my YouTube channel, but the early stuff I did, it was called The Non-Essentials.
Yeah.
And so I had a like a blog on Blogspot or something like that. And it was right around whenever a season of Arrested Development came out, maybe when one version of 24 came out. And so I just put some videos right along with this blog that I kind of started called The Non-Essentials. And those are still kind of up on the channel. And I think like Arrow season one was one of my first videos.
Yeah.
And which is interesting enough because the finale of Arrow was last night. But Star Trek Into Darkness, Now You See Me. Those are some super early things that I did. And every 6 months, I'd put three videos up, quit for 6 months, and kind of come back to it. So then, for whatever reason, when I did Ghostbusters, I came up with the Sean Chandler Talks About name that I really did think I wasn't going to stick with it. And here we are.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy the way life plays out. Let's actually rewind a little bit and start talking through what made us love movies, what some of that stuff looks like for each of us. So my early memories of watching movies, I think the first one I saw in the theater was Oliver and Company. That's the first one I kind of very loosely remember, but don't really remember. Mm-hmm. And then it's summer 89 with Batman, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and Star Trek V, the Final Frontier. Those three, that summer, that's when I start actually having memories of going to the movies and being excited about Batman, collecting all the cards. And then all throughout the 90s, you know, my sister and I were really into nerd culture comic books, went to Star Trek conventions, because comic cons weren't what they are now. So you had conventions still, but for us, that was Star Trek conventions. Same exact idea, just Star Trek, though. So you'd have the panels with Star Trek people, you'd have all the booths, but it was all Star Trek stuff. And that's what I did throughout a lot of the 90s. And that's where a lot of my love for movies comes from. And some of my early memories with my parents is watching Top Gun and Star Trek 4.
Yeah.
How about you? What are some of those early memories of getting into movies and things like that?
Yeah, I mean,
childhood, childhood, not when you really got it, but childhood type stuff.
Yeah, no. For me, I mean, you know, watching The Phantom Menace was pretty big for me. Like my uncle was kind of obsessed with it. He was obsessed with Star Wars, and so like, I mean, I think I'm like 90% sure The Phantom Menace was my first Star Wars film. And so like seeing like, you know, Darth Maul and like the lightsaber battles and like all that stuff, like it was just like really cool and like transformative. For like myself, like, you know,
as much as like we pick on crap on the prequels because there's problems in there,
sure,
like it opened a generation's eyes up to what was possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of that, like, that's my son, Attack of the Clones is his favorite because he loves the droids, he loves clone troopers, all that
stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
And all that childish stuff that people like myself pick on for so. That's what's making him love the same thing that I love.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
I agree. You know, and I mean, I will defend the prequels, you know. I mean, I think they're a more cohesive story than, you know, whatever the heck the sequel trilogy is.
I think that at this point in time, that's almost not even debatable.
Yeah,
exactly. There's so many things to criticize about the prequels, but George knew his beginning, his middle, and his end.
Yeah.
The exact way it was told, how we got there. But, like, there's cohesive themes, ideas that go from beginning to end of it. You know what it's about, and it does that thing.
Yeah, it has an identity, which, I mean, you can't really say for the sequel stuff. But
sequels.
Yeah, but like, outside of that, I mean, you know, I remember, like, Monsters, Inc. was huge for me. I loved that movie. The Harry Potter films, I mean, obviously, I grew up on those. I remember watching the first one on VHS, maybe the second one on no, I think the second one was on DVD at that time. But then I saw the third one, I think was the first one I saw in theaters. And, like, the werewolf stuff at the end always freaked me out. And, like, But still, like, regardless of that, I mean, I remember the experience of, like, seeing the werewolf, like, you know, Professor Lupin turn into the werewolf, and that was all just like, whoa, this is, like, I don't know if I can watch this stuff. This is pretty edgy.
Right.
But, like, I really enjoyed being in that world, and I loved, like, going back and revisiting those films. I wasn't necessarily a kid, but, like, some of the more memorable, like, movie... I guess memories that I have came from like 2005 when I saw like Batman Begins and Peter Jackson's King Kong. I like have vivid memories of seeing both of those films for some reason. Batman Begins, because that just blew my mind in terms of like what a Batman film can be. But just like also just like being enamored with every sort of facet of it. And then King Kong just... I mean, that still to this day is one of my favorite films of all time, just because of it took me on this like sweeping epic journey. And I love the romance story in it. I think Peter Jackson's production design and how he just handles the world of Skull Island, and how it's a very old fashioned kind of movie, but made with modern filmmaking technology, and it just I adore that movie. So like, those are some of my earlier memories. I mean, my God, I was like asking my mom about this like months ago, and I was like, yeah, you know, I don't really remember much of my childhood. Like, I remember watching all those Disney classics on VHS, like, you know, Peter Pan I would have on repeat, like some of the Toy Story movies and stuff, like the stuff normal kids would watch at that age. We'd have like VHSs and we'd watch those on repeat.
I feel lucky because my childhood was like the Disney Renaissance.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, Little Mermaid, my memories start. I just talked about 1989 is that year where I start remembering going to the theater. That's Little Mermaid. And then, you know, 5 years later is The Lion King. I mean, that's, I was the target audience for this incredible run of Disney movies. And then right as I move out of kind of Disney age or when they start slowing down, Toy Story 1995.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. All right, let's kind of transition to those movies that when we started to get filmmaking, not just I like movies or those early childhood memories of watching them, but when it kind of that switch went off and you started to understand it at that next level.
Yeah.
So for me, I graduate high school and a buddy of mine, his name is Jeremy Meese. He goes, hey man, I got to take you to the little indie theater. I got to show you this movie called Memento.
It's See, backwards. This is great because I feel like everyone's story with this, like at least who are around like our general ages, which I know there is a gap between us, but like,
yeah,
because of Nolan's career has spawned like throughout
the same
like,
story in
same sort,
such
yeah.
a huge age gap. That's which is great. Yeah. Like that's, crazy his influence.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
So we got to go see this movie Memento and I go see it and it's like, wow, like that was like incredible. It's a movie, but it's not like big explosions and it's told all different. And then Jon Favreau's first movie was called Maid, the first one he directed.
Yeah.
And it played at the same indie theater. And so I went to start going to all these little indie movies and discovering, wait, there's these other things out there. And, oh, let me look into Martin Scorsese and Tarantino and let me watch through all of his stuff.
Yeah.
And it just kind of started, you know, it was my more pretentious phase. But that phase was also really important for me to have depth. As I got older, I went back to liking explosions. But But it really was Christopher Nolan. And my friends, through this Mies who has kind of introduced me, that I told some other guys, you got to go see this movie Memento. And then they checked it out. And you know, even my buddy that I saw at the screening of the Rhythm Section last night, that he told me just a couple months back, like, you know what, like when I got into movies is when you told me about Memento. Like the reason I go to South by Southwest every year and Fantastic Fest every year is because I love movies. And that started with you telling me about Memento. And it just literally goes back to this one invitation from this buddy Jeremy of mine, that multiple people, and now talking to you right now. And then once again, also Christopher Nolan, just his incredible influence in what he did. So that phase right there from about 2000 to 2003, I got real into just digging deep. Snatch came out around that time. Mm-hmm. And so then I loved that in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. So those are some huge formative ones where I just kind of like went all in and just kind of started researching things. And there's this phase where I just every day would go to Hollywood Video and rent a movie for $1.50. This was right as DVDs and VHS were, their swap was happening. And so they were clearing out all of their inventory. So you could buy movies for like $2. So I bought hundreds and hundreds of VHS tapes to just watch through all these movies. And like, you know, The Limey by Steven Soderbergh and just all these kind of obscure, smaller things. And so that's where it kind of happened for me. How about you?
Yeah, for me, well, it's interesting because it begins with Christopher Nolan, but like there are like multiple stages of this. So like, so like I mentioned, 2005, that was pretty big because I mean, I wouldn't say I like became a cinephile in 2005. That's just, you know, not practical. I would be in like fifth grade or something like that. But like you can sense like the magic, you know, when you're watching that sort of movie. And so like that happened to me when I watched Batman Begins. And then the following year was pretty influential for me because 2006 is when the Departed came out. And that's also when Casino Royale came out. Casino Royale is massively influential. Yep. See, you got him right there. Listen, I've got like, we got a Bond here, a Bond there. We got a Bond poster here. Like, it's just Casino Royale is massively influential to me for many reasons. But like, some of the stunts.
This isn't speaking of Casino Royale. American Beauty was another huge one for me, which obviously Sam Mendes down the road.
Right. But, see, and that's
same time period. All that.
Yeah, that one was pretty influential for me too. Like, that's one of my favorite movies of all time. But I didn't come to that film until later in life.
Right. A little bit weird, like 7 years old. Mom, can we see American Beauty?
Yeah,
why
there's
is
something
she standing in the window naked.
Yeah, I feel like there's something just not right about that. but
just a little bit.
Just a little bit. But Batman Begins, Casino Royale really made me look at action movies in a different way, especially that opening sequence when it's the foot chase in Madagascar and they're doing a bunch of parkour. Like that, to this day, that is still my favorite action sequence of all time. But more than that, I loved what it did with character and how it made me feel. And then The Departed, I did not watch that film until I saw it on DVD at my cousin's house or something like that. And dude, I think that there was like, so the acting in that movie blew my mind. The direction, the dialogue. I mean, the fact that it was able to maintain my attention for such a long runtime, and then the ending, because like you don't see any of it coming. We're just like, you know, spoiler alert, everyone dies. it's just like, holy crap. There's so many just twists and turns in it. And like, that's where my love of Martin Scorsese began. And so like from there, I went back and I dug into his older films. But like, really what it comes down to with my love of film, like really looking at it more critically, I guess you could say, is with The Dark Knight and Inception. The Dark Knight was like the appetizer, and then Inception was like the full blown meal, you know? So like, The Dark Knight just, I had never seen anything like that before. I had not seen Heat before I saw The Dark Knight. And so, you know, when I went back and watched Heat, I was like, holy crap, this is like, this movie's incredible. But like seeing how The Dark Knight was able to borrow from that film while making it its own, it just is remarkable. And so, Ledger's performance, the bank robbery, the craftsmanship behind it, the dialogue, like the fact that this was a Batman movie, but it like felt nothing like a Batman movie. It's just words cannot describe how that made me feel. I mean, I remember seeing the trailer too for the first time, and with like Ledger's laugh, it's just it's such a good trailer. But then, you know, fast forward 2 years, or I guess it's just a year, or no, 2 years.
It's 2 years.
Yeah, Dark Knight was 08.
It's 2010.
So, yeah, to 2010 to Inception. It's just like, holy God.
I just did my video with my favorite movies of the decade. I received way too many comments. Where's the Dark Knight? In a different decade.
Yes, listen, like, folks, The Dark Knight came out in 2008. There you go. Was it 2008?
Not this decade.
Yeah, it was 2008. 2009 Oscars, that's what it is. But yep. Yes, no, I mean, like, Inception, holy crap. I mean, it's just, like, the direction, the story, like, the open ending of the film, like, I mean, the dream levels, the craftsmanship, I don't even know if I probably
all the craftsmanship, whatever you want to call it, of yeah. Oscar bait with the entertainment value of a blockbuster.
Yeah. I mean, it still blows my mind that, like, a big budget, like, movie like that got made and became such a cultural phenomenon. Like, it just... Only Christopher Nolan could do that, and really, he is the only one to this day.
And continues to do that, yeah.
Yeah, like, a movie like Tenet doesn't happen without, like, his proven track record. So, like, yeah, those movies just really, like, I wanted to dissect, like, every piece of Inception. I wanted to keep going back to it. I remember walking out of that theater, and I felt like I had a religious experience. Like, it's just... It's one of the reasons why it is still to this day, like, my favorite film of all time. Like, I recently rewatched it, and it's just like you just pick up on different things each time, and it just the attention to detail and, like, the characters. I mean, I could gush about that movie all day long, but yeah, that one was just massively influential.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just one of those ones that when I think about movies that I just love that it exists.
Yeah, I know.
That it's right? interesting that it exists, that, like, well, someone had such a bonkers idea.
Yeah.
And then executed it so well, and it's entertaining.
Yeah.
And there's little things like, you know, it has Tom Hardy in it before Tom Hardy broke. I mean, yeah. That was what, like, he'd been in a lot of things. I mean, he was in Star Trek Nemesis 18 years ago.
Yeah.
But he
yeah,
hadn't
yeah.
broken through yet. And so then that was one of those ones where it was like, oh, who's that guy? He's kind of fun and charming. And then he's in yeah. Warrior the next year, and then, you know, explodes with 2012 and Dark Knight Rises. And so, you know, been able to
yeah.
ever since.
Well, and interestingly enough, 2010 as a whole was the year where I really started, more so than past years, really started to pay attention to the Oscars, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, obviously I paid attention when, like, The Dark Knight was, like, being lauded and stuff like that. And, all this stuff, but, like, 2010, because that was the year The Social Network and The King's Speech came out. And while, like, I don't, like, I like The King's Speech, I'm not, like, obsessed with it, but I remember seeing that movie and just, like, really appreciating the acting. The Social Network also was, like, really influential in, like, me, you know, wanting to be more critical of movies because of that script, man. Like, and Fincher's directing, too, it's just, like, yeah, and well, on top of it just being a really fascinating story and really pertinent to the time period I grew up in, with, like, Facebook being, like, massive. So it was interesting right. to see that. And, like, yeah, that was sort of where my, like, love of the Oscars and the award season really just kind of went to the next level.
All right, let's do some quick fire questions back and forth at one each other to see
let's
what interesting stuff. So be thinking some questions. As soon as you give your answer to my question, fire a question back at me, and we'll see what interesting things we can happen. Or if you want to repeat my question, we get whatever we want to do.
Maybe,
I don't know
maybe
how
we'll
this is
going
to play out.
We don't know. Who knows? This will be terrible.
This could be need to be edited out. So, what annoys you most about Hollywood right now and what they're doing?
Oh, God. That is... I don't think there's any
short answer.
A short answer. There are many things. And this is the first thing that just came to mind, probably because I'm, like, still fuming over the Rise of Skywalker. Just the lack of respect when it comes to, like, creators who have a vision and studios not wanting to take chances. I mean, we see this with Marvel Studios, with, like, Scott Derrickson leaving. We see this with, like, Lucasfilm, like, left and right, and with especially with the Rise of Skywalker. Like, that's sort of just, like, and then obviously with, like, Justice League and, like, the early stage of the DCEU, that, like, the studio interference, like, I feel like there's always been cases of that, but I feel like it's never been as bad as it is now. And maybe some of that has to do with social media, but to me that right now is one of the most frustrating things among
right.
you know, well, many things.
Even to what we just said, there's a bunch of stuff that only Nolan can do. Mm-hmm. Spielberg can't even do what Nolan's doing. It's just Nolan that the studios go, okay, your name is a brand. We'll trust you.
Yeah.
And beyond that, they're looking for safe bets.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just so frustrating. Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. Same.
What do you got for me?
Holy crap! if you were to do something other than what you're doing right now, and other than what you were doing in the church world, would you for which I assume your audience knows you come from that church world background and whatnot. But if you were
you
not
don't
doing
know,
those,
I worked at a church for 8 years with teenagers, so that's where I learned to talk. Basically.
There you go. Yeah, you're all cut up. If you were not doing those two things, what would you be doing instead?
And that's always tough. I think just by my nature, I'm a creator, and that's why I drifted towards this. I just love in my free time to make things.
Yeah.
And I like to help people. So I've always thought about wanting to create, to do some writing, to create a course to help people with something, and I never really knew what to do with that. And so now I'm even thinking about doing that. Like, I'm probably going to create some content in the next year or 2 years related to YouTube because I have a story that can help other people.
Yeah.
So that's something that comes to mind. I am a writer. When people ask me all the time, would you love to direct a movie? A little bit, but like the idea of like putting the story together is the part that's a little bit more interesting to me. Like the crafting the narrative. If I worked with a friend of mine or someone I could, like a work partner, that they would do the day-to-day of like on the set being mean, and we're like working on crafting a story and writing. I'm more of a writer, I would think, than necessarily the guy with the megaphone having to be mean to people. I can do some of that, but I'm not. It's a lot more stressful to me. Like the fun part is sitting, and I've done a lot of scripted projects in church world. There was one time I did a 50-page, 50-minute-long video scripted project. It was actually Inception and Star Wars based. I haven't actually talked about it much on my channel, but it was literally it was for a retreat, and it was like this plot that combined basically this story about the different churches having a dodgeball competition that was inspired by dodgeball, and then they used Inception technology to go into my brain so I could train them on how to play dodgeball. And then that was very inspired with the way it played out by Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And then the final episode inside of it was actually heavily inspired by, borrowed a bunch of style from Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So anytime someone got hit by a ball, they turned to coins. And it was like this over the top project that I spent way too much time writing and everything on it. But man, it was a cool thing to create. But the actual data, like writing that, I loved doing that.
Yeah.
And trying to put the pieces together, organizing people on set to get teenagers to behave and act was not as fun. So
no, that's nutty. Quick follow-up to that before you hit me with one. What if you were to write a film, what is the closest example you could think of to like what kind of movie it would be like? Obviously, I'm assuming it'd be like some sort of action movie, but
I default to thinking, what could I actually get done and what's interesting and do I get excited about? So the one that I've thought about, what would be the closest comparison, would be Your Next.
Because
home invasion, it's got some action inside of it, and I just thought like that's a type of movie that I would make.
Yeah,
that was literally my feeling. Like if I could make a movie, that would be something I'd be proud of. And I like when I think what would I want to write or make, I don't gravitate actually towards all these big blockbusters. People ask me all the time, "Would you like to do a Marvel movie?" No, that's a little bit too big for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I can get excited about the idea of something like that, just a nicely crafted story that's efficient, or something like Taken. Like that's direct, visceral, shoot people in the face. I gravitate towards that simple stuff. All right, firing back to you, the flip side to my previous question, what are you most excited about that seemed like as a trend in Hollywood? Not like, hey, I like this director, but as a trend that you're seeing that you think is a positive?
Trends that I think are positive. I think because now this isn't it's not always happening, but I think because the past few years there's been such a like studios have been so constricting when it comes to interference and creative differences. I think now we're getting some more interesting voices that are allowed to express themselves in different ways. Like this year especially, I'm really noticing that, like, Warner Brothers is giving, I think it's Warner Brothers at least, Warner Brothers is giving Denis Villeneuve, like, millions of dollars to make Dune. Like, that is mind-blowing, considering the fact that Blade Runner 2049 was not by any means a success.
Right.
But they're trusting him to do that. I mean, Christopher Nolan, right, obviously, and being the filmmaker he is given carte blanche to do Tenet. Like, that's just, yeah.
And, like, with even with 2049 not doing well, that's a financial thing. It's a statement about how much they spent on the movie, but no one's complaining about its quality.
Exactly.
Everyone that did go see it was like, oh, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And so that they didn't see that and go, oh, let's stop this guy. They went, it's okay to take a risk. Like, if we lose some money, but something fantastic exists, is that a loss? No, it's still a win. Unfortunately, we also didn't make money with it.
Right, right. And I think when you look outside, like, the Lucasfilm and Marvel and really the Disney, you know, umbrella, you're getting a lot more interesting projects. Like, and especially in the independent world, you're getting stuff like Uncut Gems, like Waves, like, well, there's a couple movies at Sundance that are premiering that really have grabbed my attention, like the movie Nine with Winston Duke. I'm fascinated to see what that's about. Obviously, you're getting filmmakers like Cary Fukunaga doing, like, a James Bond movie, which still just kind of blows my mind considering the kind of filmmaker he is.
Right. Me and you were in the process of watching through the James Bond movies.
Yeah.
And especially kind of we just watched the Roger Moore era, and you think comparing to the artistic value of this, like those movies, hate those movies. The artistic value of the guys that they've gotten over the last 10 years, it's pretty incredible. The talent that they went for, like, oh, you did American Beauty. How about you do a James Bond movie?
Exactly.
That's pretty wild. That's wild.
it's pretty nuts. But, I mean, thankfully, Craig, you know, worked with him on Road to Perdition, you know, back in the day. Mm-hmm. So maybe that kind of, like, led to him working.
Back to what we talked about before, Road to Perdition was a big movie for me because it was like, because I'd just seen... American Beauty is like, wow, what's this guy going to do next? Oh, it's like timepiece. Tom Hanks is a hitman. Wait, what is this?
Yeah.
I remember distinctly when that one came out, but
No. But I mean, you're getting really, like, really interesting and diverse projects. And I think if we continue in that trajectory, I'll be happy. Just like, you just got to look outside of, like, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, the Disney umbrella, because, I mean, everything we've been getting under there and, like, the MCU and, like, I mean, other than, like, apparently WandaVision, which is going to blow everyone's minds, according to the powers that be. But, like, you know, when you get outside the MCU and Lucasfilm and, like, that whole thing, I think we are starting to see some interesting stuff. Like DC is just... they're killing it right now, which I can't believe I'm saying, given how rocky their start was. But, like, coming out of Birds of Prey, I'm like, yes, it's such an unassuming movie that is not worried about connecting with everything else. It's just like a creator's vision, a lot of, like, fun performances, and just, like, you know, a lot of pizzazz and style that plays into, like, you know, who Harley Quinn is as a person. It's like, yeah, I want to see more movies like that, you know? So in Wonder Woman 1984, looks like it's going to kill it because it's like Patty Jenkins, like, doing the Wonder Woman movie, I guess she wants to do now that the origin's out of the way. So, like, there's just a lot of, like, when it comes to franchise filmmaking, I think there are some risks being taken if you just look for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just not from Disney. But that's what people talk about all the time, that everything's a sequel, everything's a remake, is there no originality left? If you're asking that, if you're saying that, like, I know what you're talking about. I know what you're seeing. That when it comes to blockbusters, we just talked about this, only Nolan gets to do original stuff.
Yeah.
If you move away from the $100 million category and you start looking beneath that... there's no shortage of creativity. There's no shortage of originality. But I get what you're saying. Like, I grew up in the 90s where they're like all of these spec scripts, crazy ideas that are – and that stuff isn't really there like it was before. I get what you're saying, but it doesn't mean there's not all this other stuff if you're just willing to do, like, look into it. You go to Fantastic Fest, and there's all these weird, low-budget genre films and all kinds of gems in there. And no shortage of creativity whatsoever. To tie back to what you asked me before about things I would do if I wasn't doing this, this isn't something I would pursue as a career, but a thing I've always had on my mind to, like, if ever I get the boldness to pursue this. I've always wanted to experiment with stand-up comedy. Like, I've always, that's been on my mind since I was 18 to give it a shot. And I've always had little ideas and little things I've put together, but that is the scariest one. Like, of all things, that to me is the scariest thing to try.
Yeah,
to
man.
Walk out on stage of a room full of strangers without a shared value set and just try and make them laugh.
Yeah.
That to me is like, such an amazing thing I'd love to try, and the most terrifying thing I can imagine.
I would love to see Sean Chandler stand up. That would be, I'd just be so curious as to what it would be, you know, like, what does that sound like? What does the performance kind of like what is it? Like, that fascinates me.
I've got some stuff. It would definitely be story based. It would be little anecdotes.
Yeah.
Crafted to perfection. And I'd probably want it to, whatever the length of the set was, have this theme running, and it keeps doing these callbacks to the theme, and it builds sorts of the, I have this master plan of what it would be. Sitting down to actually write that thing, that hasn't happened yet, but someday we will get that. All right, let's do a couple final questions. What do you have, a final question for me?
A final question. Well, man, now I got to make this good.
Mind blowing.
Dang, man. I'm under pressure. I don't know. This is you know what? How about this?
Haven't you interviewed Willem Dafoe and hold on.
Hey, man, I always have stuff written down and I'm like, you know, going off the cuff here, but let me suggest this for our final question. Why don't we toss it to our listeners, and then we answer those final questions in the at the top of next week's episode.
Gotcha. All right. That could be fun. Yeah. So everybody in the comment section, let us know those interesting questions that you have, and then we'll snag a question, and we will try and answer those questions. Make this a little bit interactive. That'll be a nice little touch. Let's make that a little recurring thing in here as well, is just ask people for some questions, and then we will tackle them in our videos. I do have a question for you. It's a self-indulgent one, though. So absolutely. You've met me in real life.
Yes.
What was the biggest surprise about real life, Sean?
You're more reserved than you appear to be on camera. Like, you know, based on your on-camera persona, you're always like, you'd always think like, oh, hey, I'm animated, like doing all stuff like blah, movies, you know, whatever. But it's like, you're just like a totally normal person. Like, you're just like, hey man, how's it going? Like, it was just like very chill and like, you know, relaxed and stuff like that. But but what I will say is, like, you know, once you spend time like talking to you and whatnot, it's like, then you get like, you know, the internet persona to like, you know, come out every now and then.
Right. Like it clicks. I go into some sort of monologue and open whatever, my brain switches different paths and I go into like hand moving mode.
No, I can see the differences and similarities and where stuff starts to like, you know, kind of come through. Yeah.
I've had people like, they met me in person and for the first hour, they just thought I hated them. Because I was just so different, and then eventually it switched a little bit, and they understood. Oh, he's just not like that in real life. Or people that know me in real life watch my videos. Sometimes they're like, "What are you doing?" Like with the, hey,
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't even mean to do. Like I'm not at all like. All right, at the beginning, it's just whenever I go into presentation mode. It's that, and it probably comes from talking to teenagers for 8 years straight and having to like shake their attention and catch them and everything like that. So everybody, thank you guys so much for tuning in. This is the Get to Know You episode. Hopefully you got to know us just a little bit. Here on the podcast, there should be 3-4 episodes already available if you want to check those out in the actual podcast stream. Every week we're going to be coming back, talking about the movie news. We're going to be introducing some segments. I'll probably eventually start bringing in some other friends to kind of have some voices. And have an opportunity to talk movies way too much. Hopefully some people will disagree with me so they can, all those things that I, crazy things that I say and you want someone to call me on it. Hopefully everybody's going to call me on some of that stuff. But as always, thank you so much for watching and listening, and keep talking movies too much.